Welcome, everybody, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper, I'm John Manuel, coming to you from the Baseball America podcast nook. The Baseball America podcast, this episode is brought to you by the National Baseball Hall of Fame Almanac, which Baseball America produced in conjunction with the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. It's the next best thing to touring the Baseball Hall of Fame in person. You'll find profiles of every player, manager, umpire, and executive in the Hall of Fame, including the newest inductees like Barry Larkin getting inducted this weekend. Career statistics, vitals, and achievements for all players. The book is filled with hundreds of photos, including full-page photos of every player. The Almanac is an official publication of the Hall of Fame, produced in conjunction with Baseball America, and you can buy it at baseballamerica.com store or by calling 800-845-2726. And fun publication to have worked on, JJ, especially because for you and me, it would just write some bios, and we'd have to do a whole lot more beyond that. So kudos to Sarah Hyatt McDaniel and Will Lingo for doing the yeoman's work of producing that book. But yet another publication on the Baseball America family of publications, kind of joining the podcast in our family of products. And we haven't done a podcast in a while, JJ, the two of us.
The two of us, yeah.
Jim and I did the draft deadline, signing deadline podcast, which was a fun one to
do. Jim has been doing a lot of that, because Jim did that with you, and then Jim and I did in person together after the Futures game. With my little pen mic, we did a podcast.
That was supposed to be the big secret of that podcast, was the pen mic. It sounded fine to me. You know,
it came out pretty well.
Heck, it actually probably sounded better than some of our podcasts. We were just sitting here patting our 7-year-old equalizer on the back and saying, good little machine, please keep working. So we have a new computer for the podcast, but not a new equalizer yet. So patience to everybody.
Mixer.
Thank you, a mixer. But this podcast, we're going to take some of your questions, obviously, update with the trade deadline. But, JJ, we just thought we'd start off with, the two guys who are the story in baseball. And, at the All-Star game, when you had guys comparing, guys like George Brett and Al Kaline comparing Mike Trout and Bryce Harper to the maze and mantle of their day. First of all, who's the Duke Snyder? There's got to be, all these things have to come in threes, don't they? Is that going to be Jerks and Profar?
Maybe
if you move
the
center field.
Elvis
Andrus is a pretty good cheap shortstop. Maybe that's where Jurickson Profar winds up. Not because he can't play shortstop, but
for
the Texas Rangers, why
third.
Would you get
He's
rid of him?
He's played second, short, and third all this year in games in
AA. They don't really have a center fielder that they want to be their center fielder every day. They want Josh Hamilton to be on a corner. I never thought about that before now, but hey, why not? Who do you like? Who do you got? The first half, the fact that Mike Trout has been better to this point. Have you, with Mike Trout in the long-term Trout versus Harper Olympics, or do you still have Bryce Harper? I believe you and I both had Harper coming
we
into the year.
We both had Harper. I'm still going to go Harper, and I will acknowledge right now we'll be debating this for probably the next 20 years.
This will be on several other future podcasts.
Yeah.
In the year 2000.
Our kids may be debating this on a podcast.
That's possible if your girls get into baseball.
Yeah, got a little ways to go on that right now. But the thing I do want to point out, though, is and Mike Trout is having just an amazing year. I mean, like, Bryce Harper's having a solid year. Bryce Harper, though, if you said, who is the NL Rookie of the Year right now, I don't think you could argue Bryce Harper, but I don't think he's really the best case right now. In the AL, it's not only Mike Trout. Mike Trout is the Rookie of the Year, barring I don't know what would have to happen.
Yeah, might be the MVP right now.
But I was going to say, but you may say that he's the MVP, and I think there's a pretty strong case that he is. How crazy is it? I did hear this on some show on XM that I can't remember which show it was because I want to give it credit. It's not an original idea on my part. But how crazy is it? Albert Pujols right now, you could legitimately argue, is the third most important guy in that lineup.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Although since Trout got there, Pujols' numbers are insane. I shouldn't say insane. They're Pujolsian,
right,
is what they are.
But they may not still be Trumbonian.
They're not Trumbonian. Mark Trumbo is a whole other subject. That's actually a good one to tackle in the podcast. But I'm still first of all, who's the National League Rookie of the Year if it's not Bryce Harper for you? Who has the better case?
Wade Miley's got a pretty good case.
Yeah, I'm not looking at that being sustained.
If you're saying for right now, Todd Frazier has had better numbers this year. He is pretty important to the Reds. He's going to be even more important now because he's the regular.
He's their first baseman.
He's their first baseman until Votto comes back. But I think especially you give Harper an edge on the fact that he plays center field on a pretty regular basis. But with Frazier, you got to give him credit for the fact that pretty much wherever the Reds have had a need. One thing it did work out for the Reds have never let Todd Frazier settle down a position.
Right.
But what that did mean is, oh, you need a left fielder? Okay, well, he's your left fielder right now. Scott Rowland's on the DL? Hey, he's your third baseman. Now Joey Votto? Okay, he can
right.
be first baseman.
I'll give you Wiley. I'm not going to give you, even though he's been better, he has better rate stats, but Frazier just hasn't played as much as Harper.
No,
played.
And but I think those guys are at least
100 more plate appearances for Harper.
But
I mean, that's a lot.
That is a lot, but I think that those guys, well, especially again, Frazier's going to end up being, you know, but is 100 less because Harper's going to play every day, too. They're not going to be any Steven Strasburg shutting Harper down to keep
right.
his at-bats down
right.
or anything.
Right.
But that being said, I still think that, you know, if you look at it, I think those guys at least, and I'm probably forgetting someone off the top of my head right now, too.
No, I think you got them. Those are the main guys. I think Wade Miley's been, has had the best half season, but I don't see Wade Miley sustaining that all year. And I don't believe that Trevor Bauer will be entering that mix, having just been sent down by the Diamondbacks. That's obviously a tangent.
But let's go on the tangent for a minute, though, because it's been interesting to watch. This is something I keep coming back to, is that when you're talking about a hitter, and we get all the questions all the time, when's this guy coming up? When's this guy coming up? And with the hitter, not that there aren't guys who struggle, but there are a lot of times a guy, you know, a hitter comes up and pretty much he steps in and does it. With pitchers, you do see time and time again just how difficult that jump from AAA to the big leagues is. I think Trevor Bauer has seen that. Not that Trevor Bauer is not going to be a very good long-term big leaguer.
Right.
But he's learned a little bit from this first taste of it. You know what? I can't be as he's been so focused on the strikeout. The little bit I've seen him, I've watched several of those starts trying to see what's going on. And what jumped out to me was that there's a lot of times where he gets two strikes and he thinks he can get a guy to chase.
Right.
And
right.
big leaguers, unlike AAA guys, big leaguers don't chase those pitches.
Yeah, the bottom line is if you're going to be a strikeout pitcher in the major leagues, you got to get swings and misses in the strike zone. Bottom line, the good big league hitters don't chase. And Trevor Bauer
didn't. The thing about it is even when you get them a good pitch in the zone, a lot of the good hitters is like, yeah, I can't do anything with that. Okay, foul off.
Correct.
Now here, let's go again.
Correct. And that's why movement is such a – it has to be emphasized. I think to me, the things for Bauer to work on are, A, he's going to have to throw more strikes. That sounds simple, but his walk rate in the minor leagues was unsustainable. Second of all, it just comes down to fastball command. He's kind of like right now, JG's kind of being like – I know this comparison doesn't sound as good anymore. It's kind of like he's trying to be a hybrid between Tim Lincecum with the delivery and all that and Yu Darvish with, like, six pitches. And those are two super unique jokers that you're trying to basically meld.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to be this completely unique player. And I'm not saying he can't pull it off because I believe in Trevor Bauer. I believe he'll figure it out. But I'm not sure if he's athletic enough to maintain.
Six
and
pitches.
He talks about it. He talks about not being super athletic to maintain that delivery and six pitches and his workload at the big league level. I think a little failure will probably help him. I'm again, the mental, the makeup part is one of the reasons why I believe so much in Trevor Bauer. But he's going to have to – first, I think he needs to shed a pitch or two. But more than that, he needs to – the reason you shed a pitch is so you can focus more on that fastball and putting it where you need to put it. I'm convinced that he can do that. He'll never be a premium – he's not going to be Greg Maddux and put it in a teacup. But I'm convinced that he will throw more strikes with the fastball because he realizes now that he has to. I think he has the stuff and the ability to adjust to do that. But there are some concerns.
You can shelve a pitch. If you're Trevor Bauer, you can shelve a pitch for now. And you know what? 2 years from now,
yeah.
if you need to, you can bring it back.
Right.
But the other thing with that I always bring up now, it seems like I've brought it up a couple times, is
pitching is hard.
If Matt Moore struggles
right.
in his rookie season.
Right. Anybody can.
Anybody can, because Matt Moore, you couldn't be more ready.
You're
but
right.
That, all this was a side point note. The point I was trying to make, though, is that as great as Mike Trout's season is, and it's
yeah,
great.
And Moore was there with Harper and tried to start the year, so
but,
it's a great way to bring it back.
But as great as his season is this year, you have to remember, the difference is that Bryce Harper's doing this as a 19-year-old. Mike Trout came up last year as a 19-year-old. Mike Trout hit 220, 281, 390 as a 19-year-old.
Right.
Bryce Harper...
No, he's doing it in the junior varsity. Well, that's the
it
one
is,
caveat.
It is, you know.
Bryce Harper's in the National League.
You know,
I'm not sure how
hey,
much he's doing in the American League.
You're talking about your all-star this game counts champion, and it wasn't even close.
That's right. That's right.
But the thing I've just made, the point I'm making is that when we're judging them, I know that you are talking about the difference between a you know, he's still a rookie. You know, he still could be rookie of the year. But Mike Trout had his taste of the big leagues last year.
Right.
And took him that first chance to kind of get comfortable in it. Spring training coming in the next year, and he just goes crazy.
It's amazing to me to look at Mike Trout and see the black numbers. That's what I was trying to show you, is that he leads the American League in OPS plus. I mean, Harper's having a good year.
The only thing I can think of is Fred Lynn. That's like the year is like you're like this Fred Lynn's rookie year.
I was at Sportscaster Camp yesterday, Patrick Keenis's Sportscaster Camp. He's the voice of the Durham Bulls. And Scott Pose, the ex-big leaguer who I do some work with the Bulls, he asked me, he was talking about being a player and dealing with the media. And he said, who's the best player in the major leagues right now, John? He just looked at me, and I didn't even think about it. I just said, Mike Trout. I mean, like right now, he's the best player in baseball. And he's the most exciting one. He's the most fun one to watch. And that's the treat. I still think my point on Harper, I'm surprised by Mike Trout's power, JJ. I'm surprised that he's hit 13 home runs.
I'm not shocked by that because, again, he is, as we were given descriptions last year, he's Brian Urlacher on a football field, on
right.
a baseball field. That kind of thing, the frame, the body was there that you just.
That's true.
It's not that surprising that as he gets older. Like, I got questions.
I thought it would take him a little
chat,
while to tap into it.
When people are like, what are you saying? Mike Trout may have more power than Oscar Tavares. Well, Oscar Tavares has really good power, but and it's getting better and better. But look at Mike Trout. I mean, there's
Mike Trout does it easier. I mean, Oscar Tavares' swing. I'm not going to change it. I wouldn't change it, but there's some
effort there. It's a Pedroia-esque swing in a much larger package.
Correct. And Mike Trout is so easy. But, you know, I've been a little bit surprised that Bryce Harper's, quote-unquote, only slugging .458. I thought he would show a little more power, but I mean, again, I thought anything could happen when this guy came up at 19. I thought it wasn't out of the realm of possibility that he was rushed and that he would struggle. But I thought that he was just too good of an athlete, too good of a baseball player to struggle, and he's really kind of been completely different than what we thought he would be. He's not a masher. He's hitting in the two hole a lot. He's playing center field a lot. This is not what we expected Bryce Harper to be. So the fact that he's still successful while doing all these things that aren't his real true strengths, and that's pretty impressive, and I think that just sets him up for true greatness down the line.
And the other thing, again, with this is I wrote about this before the year. I think I just tweeted about it recently, is that eight home runs. He has eight home runs
right now. That's a lot for a teenager.
Eight home runs for a 19-year-old puts him in the top 10 of all time single season for a 19-year-old, and he's at eight right now. By the end of the year, he's going to be in the top five. There's no, again, barring injury, he's going to be in the top five, no doubt. And he could be in the top three.
Right.
Because take Tony Conigliaro out of it, who had the greatest season, as you're going to see from a 19-year-old. Pretty much 19-year-olds don't hit for power in the big leagues.
Right.
And he's hitting for some power. It's not, you know, he's not, yeah, he's having a few more defensive at-bats maybe than he will when he's 21, 22, when, you know, it's a grizzled vet. You know, but it is something where he is really
grizzled vet at 21.
He's a very integral part of that lineup right now as a 19-year-old. And again, I can't.
Yeah, Al Kaline hit four home runs as a 19-year-old. He hit 27 as a 20-year-old, but he hit four as a 19-year-old.
And that's the thing I'm saying, like that
right.
At that age, like we saw with Mike Trout. Mike Trout hit five last year, and everyone was pretty impressed. But he had 11. I mean, it was 123 at bats. He had 11 extra base hits last year in 123 at bats. He has a lot, you know, he's up that percentage a little bit this year.
The impressive thing to me for Trout is after having seen him in the Fall League, he was so gassed in the Fall League when he was on Harper's team. And
we'll look back on that and go, wow.
Greatest Fall League team ever. I don't care who else was on there. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be just unusual to look at them having similar playing time this year and that Trout has more home runs. And then Harper has actually played a little bit more center field, it feels like, as a percentage anyway. Just weird how that's worked, although obviously now Trout's pretty much the everyday center fielder. Now that Peter Borges is hitting .210 or whatever he's hitting.
I'll stop harping on Harper's age, but the one last thing that I tweeted this out, there's a new post up on the Baseball America Prospects blog you can look at, which has the top 20 youngest players in each league, you know, majors down to Venezuelan and Dominican summer leagues. And the thing that jumps out is that Bryce Harper would be, over a year, he would be, there's no 20-year-olds in the international or PCL. There's no AAA 20-year-olds. Okay, so he's younger than, dramatically younger than anyone in AAA.
I think he's 5 years younger than Dominic Brown, who's in town this week.
He's younger than anyone in the Southern League or the Eastern League. Now, he's not younger than anyone in the Texas League because Jurickson Profar is slightly younger than
right,
him.
Right, right.
And he's younger than anyone in the California League. So
that's amazing.
There's an A-ball league that Bryce Harper would be the youngest player in. Instead, he's holding his own in the big leagues. That's amazing.
That's a crazy stat about the California League. That's an indictment of the California League this year, I would say. That there's no player younger than Bryce Harper in that league. Because the Baseball America podcast with John and JJ, we also threw out some Twitter questions, JJ, before we started, and I wanted to go ahead and take a couple of these. One of them was a pretty good one from Raj61, Roger Munter, who I believe is used to send us actual letters to the editor that he typed on a typewriter back in the day. So I think he's a longtime follower. Where are we at now with Gary Brown? From number 38 preseason to not in midseason 50 to pretty epic six-week run. And I'll give you a tease that Andy Baggerly wrote his organization report on Gary Brown this issue. And obviously the Giants just played in the Nationals recently in Washington, sometime in the last couple weeks. And so even Bruce Bochy got a chance to go down and see a game before the trip or after the trip. Somehow he went to go see Gary Brown in Richmond. And the org report was all about Fred Stanley, their farm director, and those guys talking about how Gary Brown came to them with his hands in a certain position when he hit. I'm trying to remember the organization report, whether they were too far away or too close. I think they were too close. And they said, if you can hit like that, we'll let you hit until you fail. We think you're going to need to move your hands and get them out away from you, or you're always going to get tied up inside. So he hit that way last year, and he was good enough in the Cal League. No one could get in his kitchen enough that he had the kind of year he had in the Cal League. But this year, first half of the Eastern League season, obviously, he needed to make an adjustment. So they made the adjustment. They've adjusted where his hands are in his setup.
Oh, it's working.
And the last 6 weeks, he's really torn it up. So that's why. So if he consistently, let's see him sustain this. This is what you do with all hitters. You watch how pitchers adjust to you, then the hitter has to adjust back. Gary Brown has always had that issue, JJ. Frankly, his first 2 years at Cal State Fullerton were a disappointment. He was not the player we thought he'd be when he was coming out of high school. He's like our number 88 player in our high school, in our top 200 overall in the draft in 2007. Ha! Back in the day when we only did top 200. We thought he was a stud out of high school. Took him a couple years to really hit his stride at Fullerton. So maybe he's a little slow in making adjustments, but he does keep showing that he can make the adjustments. What's he done the last 6 weeks?
So in July, so that's a
2 week sample size.
2 week sample size: 438, 461, 726 in the EL. That's
not bad. Could be hot sheet worthy.
He's probably going to be on the hot sheet.
So that's the quick version.
Although the thing about it is that his week this past week has not been a little bit down compared to that. So, but it probably will be on there. Yeah.
But that's the thumbnail sketch.
He went from. He was basically had a sub 300 on base and a sub 250 batting average and a .314 slugging percentage on June 21st.
Yeah, a lot of that scout feedback that we got on that top 50 was like, this guy did not hit with authority, fourth outfielder, not enough bat.
Right.
You know.
And that was and it's been a great stretch here. It's
sustained
still,
it a little
still,
bit.
Yeah, it's still something you want to see him can keep this up, and because again. You can't throw away what he did in the first half of the year. He's still, 292, 334, 410. That's solid.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. Especially with Eastern League, he's probably right around league average. By the end of the year, if he sustains this, you can get pretty excited about it because
right.
The defense and the speed are intact. If you don't
right.
defend and run like he runs, you aren't a fourth
again,
outfielder.
As you said, the scouts who are not liking him are saying fourth outfielder because you look at him and say, okay,
yep.
He can defend, he can run. He's going to have value to a big league club, even if he is does struggle a little bit with the bat.
JJ, this is a guy that you kind of helped. I mean, I had not remembered him or heard much about this player before our midseason update, and you found a lot of scouts really did like this guy, and he was in consideration for our midseason top 50. I mean, he didn't make our midseason top 50, but we have Shea City. I'll figure out how to
Shea
word
City.
It. Shea City. Took me five tries. And Rich Wilson.
Well, that's all right, yeah, because I know if I'd have done it, it'd have come out so much better.
That's
I don't
right.
pronounce names properly.
It's Ryan and Rich who sent us two tweets, and I botched the Twitter handles, both asking about Dan Straley. What does Dan Straley do, and why has he had this breakthrough season in the A's organization?
Well, the thumbnail sketch version of that is that he's in better shape this year. Stuff's gotten better. He just keeps You know, his stuff is better stuff than it was a year ago. He can sustain it better. He has better command. You throw all those together, and you're talking about a guy now who I think it's pretty fair to say middle of the rotation, maybe if everything works right, slightly better than that. But if you said solid number three right now, solid number three starter, I think that's a pretty safe. I mean, again, I'll throw in the addendum we just did.
Right.
Pitching the big leagues quite hard.
Right.
And you always have to worry a little bit with guys who have this great pop-up, because if we were having this conversation at this time last year, we'd be doing the same thing about Brad Peacock.
Right.
Who was one of the pop-up guys. And Brad Peacock still could.
Yeah.
But Brad Peacock has fallen way back down to earth again this year.
That saddens me. I'm a big Brad Peacock guy. The thing is that Brad Peacock was in the Nationals' top 10 coming into last year, as opposed
Dan
to...
Straley
wasn't even in the A's top 30, and that wasn't a hugely deep organization.
Right.
So.
I'd say right now, if we were, you know, if we'd extended it past 50, Dan Straley would probably have not have been much, you know, he'd have been in the 50 to 60 range. So
now, would Dan Straley have ranked ahead of Aaron Hicks, Fetch 9, who has a great Kelly Kapowski Twitter avatar, which I appreciate, asks, what's up with Aaron Hicks? Is he on the rise again? You know, I haven't talked to his scout about Aaron Hicks recently, but I am heartened just by the numbers that he's hit much better from the right side this year than he ever has in the past. Got a .461 slugging percentage, isolated power about .170 from the right side, which was always
the
problem for him. So he's having, statistically, he's having a great July. He's red hot right now, having a good season.
I think,
again, like I said, I haven't talked to anybody who's bared down on Aaron Hicks. I will say his name really was not mentioned or came up at all in that midseason prospect update.
And that is the thing that I will say is that, yes, you have to be encouraged by what he's doing. At the same time,
still swing and miss. Still a lot of swing and
there's
miss.
There's a lot of swing and miss, and I'd say that there's still that at this point there's a lot of healthy skepticism out there in the scouting circles about Hicks. Not that you don't like some things and all, but at the same time you're like, okay, I want to see this for a stretch.
Right.
And I'll put it this way: if the Twins were, you know, we're going to probably transition a little bit into some trade deadline talk and all.
Right.
If the Twins aren't, the Twins are going to be sellers.
If
they're
they
not
were
gonna
buyers,
be buyers, but
right.
If they were buyers, and you said, you know what, Aaron Hicks is available. I think there's a lot of teams out there who'd be like, that's a great number two guy in a deal.
Right.
We don't want that to be the centerpiece guy.
That said, the Twins have had some prospects, some first-round picks especially, where they've been patient with them and things have ended up working out. Of course, the guy who Hicks gets compared to a lot by the Twins themselves is Denard Span, not because he's a African-American center fielder, just because Denard Span struggled for much of his minor league career,
and
really came
sudden,
on late
in
the end of his last AAA season and then the start of his next season in AAA, and he's been a productive big leaguer since then, but he really wasn't that guy. There was nothing statistically to indicate that Denard Span was going to be that guy. Now, the latest example of that, the crazy example, is how Trevor Plouffe has basically turned into J.J. Hardy. He's turned into this right-handed hitting infielder who hits with his hands kind of away from his body and has crazy power but doesn't hit for great average. I mean, like, nobody saw this coming out of Trevor Plouffe. Probably not even Trevor Plouffe. Not even
19
really.
19 homers, .532 slugging percentage for.
I mean,
I'd say that may be more stunning than Justin Ruggiano's .700 slugging percentage.
It is more stunning because at least Ruggiano hit in AAA. Not, I mean, it's a small sample size with the .700 slugging, but he did hit AAA for like the better part of 5 years. Trevor Plouffe just never hit for this kind of power. What was his, what's his career high in a season for home runs? 12?
15. Which he did last year in Rochester. Although I'll point out the funny thing is though, that was 15 in 192 at bats.
Last year when it clicked for him, but he didn't hit at all on the big league level last year, did he?
.238, .305, .392. So,
I mean, nobody saw.
Yeah, we're looking these up. We did not.
Yeah.
I did not have that on top of my head.
I think people understand that we want to sound intelligent on the podcast, so we have various. I think we have 4 mobile devices and a desktop here going, all looking this stuff up. But yeah, I mean, so. I know the Twins are not writing Aaron Hicks off.
I don't think scouts.
I don't think scouts are writing him off. I think that I do think people don't think he's a star.
Right.
I don't think people think he's a star in the making. And he is already 22. He's 3 years older. We shouldn't compare all this to the Bryce Harper line. He's 3 years older than Harper. He's just reaching his career high in home runs at Double A. He's a couple years older than Trout. This is not going to be a super impact stud guy. But can this guy be an everyday regular? I think Aaron Hicks could still be an everyday regular.
That leads into, which you brought up Jurison Profar earlier also. One of the things that gets interesting this time of year is we got the trade deadline coming up. With the trade deadline coming up, one of the questions we get asked a lot is okay, the Rosenthals and, you know, MLB Network and all can kind of handle the what teams are buyers, what teams are out there looking, you know, and, you know, these teams are scouting Greinke, these teams are scouting Cole Hamels. We have some, not that we don't have knowledge on that, but really what we focus more on is okay, so what could be some of the guys out there who would be interesting trade chips?
Right, right.
And because you hear this right now, a lot of what you end up getting is just like you see, okay, well, like the Pirates are interested in Justin Upton, but they might not be a good fit for the Diamondbacks because the Diamondbacks want a third baseman or a shortstop. Well, and then you say, okay, well, the Phillies are maybe trading Cole Hamels. What would the Phillies be looking to get back? And the thing that jumps out, we've talked about this all year, the team that has a pretty massive amount of trade chips out there, if they want to use them, is the Rangers.
Oh, yeah.
They're the team with the chips.
Well, and they're going to be making a move. I mean, there's just no doubt that – I mean, they have a 5.5-game lead on the Angels. I know there's wild cards and all that kind of stuff, but to me, one of the advantages of the two wild card thing is that it does emphasize the division winner a little bit more. And, well, decent amount more.
There, you get a much more bigger advantage now instead of it being that you just face this wild – you win that short series, then you're pretty much on an even keel, but – they're sitting there resting their starters while you're having to throw your best starters you can to get through that.
And the Angels are not going to go away. They're just getting better. I mean, with Trout and Trumbo doing what they're doing. To me, if you look at the Rangers, I mean, the needs are kind of the same we've talked about for the last couple of years, JJ. Everybody needs pitching, even the Rangers, even though obviously they've had injuries. Who's your number one starter for the Rangers come playoffs? Is it going to be Yu Darvish? Is it going to be Matt Harrison, who's having their best year? Is it going to be, Colby Lewis was decent in coming back the other day. I don't think it's going to be Colby Lewis. Is it going to be Derek Holland once he gets healthy?
Is it going to be Cole Hamels?
I don't think it's going to be Cole Hamels. It feels like the Phillies are going to re-sign him. They're making every effort to re-sign Cole Hamels, and it doesn't strike me as insincere. I think the Phillies are more likely to trade Hunter Pence, Jimmy Rollins, and some of their older position players.
The thing that's tough for the Phillies right now is that for one, they can – there is a natural reason for them to try to say we're not done yet, which is the window's closing.
Right.
And if you say we're done with 2012, the real question then becomes, okay, well, if you're done for 2012, you're
probably done for 2013. And
are you done for 2013 and 14, and it's a long ways away, or you always have that ability, you always have that chance? It's like, okay, are there moves we can make to kind of extend that window?
Right.
Well, I don't think you're going to see the Phillies in the playoffs this year. I just don't.
I think they're too far back.
I think there's too many teams between them and where they want to be.
Right, because they're double-digit games back, and they're four teams ahead of them in the NL East. I think they're still 9 games back in the wild card, and it seems like the whole National League, basically, outside of the Cubs and Astros and the Padres, are between them and the wild card.
So I don't think... to me, if Cole Hamels is not available, then the trade market becomes a whole lot more desperate, I guess would be the word for it.
Yeah, it seems like Matt Garza and Ryan Dempster, the Cubs seem like they hold a lot of the keys, JJ. Even if Cole Hamels is available, the Cubs have two pitchers.
You can only go one place.
The Cubs have two different options for teams. They have Ryan Dempster, who I believe is done at the end of this year with his contract. I'm just on their contract page. Yeah, he signed through 2012. It's a $14 million deal this year, so you're picking up the rest of that. Maybe they'd sweeten the pot for you and take some of the salary if you give them back a better prospect.
I think the Cubs probably would do that.
We know that they'll do that for Alfonso Soriano. If you'll take my Alfonso Soriano, please. And that said, I think Soriano's actually a decent trade chip. If I were an American League club, if I'm like the Rays, I think John Parrotto wrote this week on Baseball Prospectus, so I'm going to give credit where it's due. If you're the Rays, if you're a team in the American League that needs a DH, you should look at Alfonso Soriano, especially if the reports are true that the Cubs will pay all, but they basically will make him a $3 million player for you. For a half season, I'd take that chance. And it sounds like, you never hear these reports that Alfonso Soriano is a clubhouse killer. You know, he's not some cancer in the clubhouse.
Right,
he just
has a terrible contract.
He just has a terrible contract, and he's not a good player. He's a good hitter, but he's not a good player. He can't defend, doesn't run like he used to. You know, but he's in the batter's box. He's still pretty good. I think he could help a team, again, like the Rays or any of those. If you were the Orioles, you've already made the Jim Thome move. But if you hadn't made that move, Alfonso Soriano might have been a better option.
So let me ask you this question.
You have Garza to finish on the Cubs,
right,
who has another year on his contract. And that would make Garza, I would think, a lot more expensive to acquire,
right, well,
in terms of prospects.
You have to remember the rules change that's happened now.
Right.
That you trade for Ryan Dempster. Ryan Dempster is not getting you a pick at the end of the year. So one of the things that that makes it tougher to trade a guy like Dempster, though, is that you always have to run through the in your head, if you're the Cubs, you have to say, okay, can we get more now for Dempster,
right,
than the pick that we get for him, the compensatory pick? But also with that, the compensatory pick's not as valuable now as it was before, because now you're not getting – the first round, you know.
Right. Just the example that Jim Council and I kept talking about with the competitive balance lottery. Last year, the Red Sox lost the 31st overall pick. I mean, gained the 31st overall pick from the Phillies. So when the Phillies signed Jonathan Papelbon, they lost pick 31 to Boston, and Boston got a supplemental compensatory pick. Now, into this current system, pick 31 would just go poof. It would just be gone.
Bye-bye.
So there's just no pick 31 anymore. It goes to somebody else.
Right. So the difference is that there's a big difference between getting a first rounder, which could be pick in the old system, pick 16.
Correct.
And a supplemental pick. There's a
correct.
Big difference between that and saying, hey, well, we get a supplemental pick.
Now the best you're getting is and not only a supplemental pick. I'm pretty sure it's a supplemental pick after the competitive balance lottery.
Right.
After the first round and after those six competitive balance lottery picks.
But again, if with the first round picks going poof.
Yeah, it could be in that 35 to 45 range, more likely will be the supplemental.
I was going to say, or it could be like 32, 33, because.
Yeah, if a lot of those five
first round picks disappear, then that first compensatory pick could be end up being like pick 27, 26, you know, something like that.
I'm not sure how many other. Those pitchers. I think the Cubs are one of the teams that hold the keys. The other one, JJ, that's fascinating is. The Diamondbacks, because talking to a couple of scouts this week over at the DBAP, everyone's talking. Those guys say it's very consistent. The Arizona Diamondbacks are definitely selling Justin Upton, and Kevin Towers is being old school KT. He'll tell you what he thinks of Justin Upton, and it's not much. All the reports you see where he says that Upton's not a winning ball player, that's what he's telling everybody. You know, it's not quite what the Phillies have done with Don Brown, which is run down a player's trade value quite a bit. But the Diamondbacks' marriage with Justin Upton seems over. You kind of wonder if how much of that is KT and how much of that's Kirk Gibson. It seems like a lot of it's Kirk Gibson just doesn't think he's a winning ball player. And they've decided to hitch their ride to so who's more attractive as a trade acquisition, Justin Upton or Matt Garza or Cole Hamels? Who would you rather have? That's a tough call.
The thing we have to point out with Upton is that they're trading him with his value down because he's having a pretty poor year. I mean, that's the thing about this is that the team that does seem to make sense is that people want to say that the Pirates can only trade pitching. I don't disagree with that because the Pirates do have low-level hitters as well.
Yeah,
if I'm the Diamondbacks, I know he's my new favorite little personal cheese ball guy, but if I'm the Diamondbacks, I know a lot of people are talking about Alan Hansen, but if I can get one of the one of the pitchers from the Pirates, and I can also get Gregory Polanco.
Now, when you're talking about one of the pitchers, are you talking about Tyone or Cole?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you were going to throw in, like, Luis Heredia, if that's enough.
Justin
Upton.
Not to me, again, you have to have the cornerstone guy of this.
I agree.
Cole or Tyone qualify as that. That's the cornerstone guy. You're getting a top-end prospect to build this around.
Yep.
Again, although the funny thing is like the Diamondbacks, you know. They got Tyone. If they got Tyone would rank somewhere between being their third best pitching prospect.
I mean, if you want to say he was better than Skaggs or Bauer, I'd listen to it. But if you want to say he was worse than Skaggs and Bauer, I listen to that. And if you want to say he was worse than Skaggs, Bauer, and Archie Bradley, I listen to that.
Right. I'll put it this way. It would be an embarrassment of riches for pitching. But I do think if they do a trade with the Pirates, unless it's a three-way deal where
it'd be pretty unique if they traded Upton and got Cole back, and Cole and Bauer were both in the same organization.
That would be pretty insane.
I'm not sure that Cole and Bauer want that.
But
in fact, I think they probably don't.
But my other thing, though, is that an Alan Hansen or Gregory Polanco is a – again, I love Gregory Polanco. We've got a feature about him coming very shortly. But a Gregory Polanco, a guy like that, is a very nice number two guy in a deal like that.
I think so.
The number one, but can be the number two.
Not for a guy like Justin Upton.
No, but they can be the number two. And the thing for me is that if you're the Pirates, that – the Pirates, it's worth – you know, we always talk about building for the future and all that. If you're the Pirates, it is worth sacrificing a little future when you are legitimately in it. I think
and they're legitimately in it.
At this point, you can say this is not the same mirage that we saw last year. They still have a lineup that basically is Andrew McCutchen and, okay, there's crickets after that somewhat.
Well, you got to give Alvarez some credit.
Yeah,
he's taken the motivation from your preseason scouts view. And he's been better this year.
Right,
he's still a swing. Obviously, the swing and miss is significant, but his power is pretty legitimate.
Right, his power is legit. But the point I'm making, though, is that if you're the Pirates and you go out and make a deal for a guy like Justin Upton, I'll put it this way, that's the most significant move to acquire major league talent, the biggest vote of confidence in the Pirates' big league club since Barry Bonds left.
Yeah, I mean, more likely, yeah. I can't think of anything they've done in the last 20 years in terms of impact on their big league club.
To me...
I guess you'd say really since bringing up Andrew McCutchen.
But to me, from the standpoint... But bringing up Andrew McCutchen is different, though, because Pirates fans are used to that. Pirates fans are used to saying, hey, here's our next guy that we hope is going to develop into something.
I guess my point is that he's really different.
Yeah,
he's
amazing. But the point I'm making, though, is that if you're a Pirates fan, that'd be the first time that you can remember, remember in your lifetime where the Pirates went, wow, they went out and got a legitimate all-star player.
Right.
To help try to win this year.
Yeah, I can't remember if they made any moves in 1997 when they finished like four games back of the Astros in the division. I don't recall they made any moves that year. Like the year the Royals, their one ephemeral fluke year in 2003. Like, didn't they go out and get Brian Anderson, the soft tossing left-hander? That was their big deadline move.
See, Justin Upton would have a little more cachet than that.
Slightly more.
And the thing about it is that the Pirates also pay. They have some chips here to trade, which...
Would Starling Marte, is he good enough to be the number one guy in a deal like that? I'm not sure that he's...
Could see maybe, but the thing to me would be like if you said Marte, Hansen, or Polanco, and Heredia, like
to go on the super young tip.
You may say, okay, you know what, we're going to give up the cornerstone pitching prospect guy, which we don't need as much, to be honest, because we got plenty of pitching coming up. But we also got to get that back. You know, that's maybe how you could make that work. Again, this is just hypothetical.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But to me,
I'm intrigued.
You, instead of going for the one top 10, top 20 prospect in the game, what you're saying is we're spreading our risk. We're taking three guys who are in the top 100.
It's going to be interesting to see if the Pirates can be a team that would be in the mix for Justin Upton. It feels like they are. And, you know, if they do that, to me, that would be the crowning achievement of all the spending they've done in the draft the last couple of years, which they were precluded from doing in this year's draft, basically by the fact that of the new system, and then they drafted Mark Appel and that he wouldn't sign for $3.8 million. So pretty intriguing. And obviously, it's been 20 years for them to have a winning season. I would really love for them to finish this off. I've been critical of that organization a lot in recent years because I think they haven't always spent their money wisely, even in the draft. You know.
I think we've talked about that. We put a chart out that's kind of spelled a lot of that out. Like, okay, look, there's a lot of million-dollar guys for them who never did anything.
But their international signings have been pretty stellar, and Andrew McCutchen is just so much fun to watch. It would be wonderful to see him in the national spotlight like that. Right now, he's a National League MVP with Votto's injury.
Now, I do want to ask you this though, since coming back to the. The thing that, you know, that I keep trying to come back to because I'm so interested as we talk about this in the office. If you're the Rangers, and again, we said there may not be a guy. The Rangers are probably going to make some kind of move, but there may not be a guy good enough to force you to make this decision. But if you're the Rangers, who do you look at as your shortstop of 2014 and beyond, I guess my question is that are you willing to move Elvis Andrus in the right move, maybe not even now, but in the off season or next year?
Right. I don't think there's any way you can move Elvis Andrus in 2012.
I don't think you can now. Because
I think it's impossible.
Because you're hurting your big league club.
I think if you win a World Series in 2012, which is entirely possible, I don't see how you do that either. To me, the most logical thing is actually what I talked about out loud earlier, is that one of those guys goes to center field. Now, they tried that one time already, not necessarily center field, but you saw how rough it was with Michael Young when they tried to move him off of that spot. It did not go well. And obviously they kept Michael Young, but it was testy. But they smoothed that over. To me, if you have the player, I mean, like, it's always with a shortstop, it feels like people who play shortstop, it's just a huge point of pride. I always remember a long time ago, John Valentin being like, I am not moving off shortstop for Nomar Garciaparra. And then he got beat out by Nomar in spring training. He's like, okay, I'll play third base. You know, and had some more productive years there. To me, if you have Jurickson Profar, and he proves he's big league ready, that has to be a competition for who your better shortstop is, and the other guy moves to center field. Because they don't have an obvious center fielder, even though I know Craig Gentry's doing well right now. He's way behind those two guys. You try to keep those guys in the middle of the diamond as much as you can, and center field's not as important as shortstop, but there's some similar – both those guys have the skills to play center field, and why move Ian Kinsler? Now, Ian Kinsler would be the guy who would be the most obvious to move. But I don't know that Ian Kinsler can play center field.
I don't think he can play center field.
I don't think he can do
it, especially over the course of that entire contract.
I mean, frankly, maybe you move Ian Kinsler to first. I don't have an answer at first base long term either. I mean, Mitch Moreland's a placeholder. He's a solid player. While he's inexpensive, he's fine. I'd rather have Mike Olt play over there long term. But
Ian Kinsler hits like a first base. These are good problems to have. These are good problems to have. Like with Mike Olt, like, yes, Mike Olt could fix their first base problem. And in some ways, it's painful to see that because
I think he's the trade chip.
Mike Olt is such a – I mean, he's a good third baseman. So you really take a big cut in what you're actually getting out of him when
right.
you take him from third and put him first. You've got – Mike Olt is a great trade chip. I mean, he would be an outstanding trade chip that could really cornerstone a deal. And then you throw in – the thing that they also have is that they've got other guys who – like Lurie Garcia. Lurie Garcia is not a prospect in any way in the same hemisphere.
Right. But he is a shortstop who can play shortstop.
Right. You're not going to say Jurickson Profar or Lurie Garcia. That being said, if I'm a team out there and I'm looking to kind of, you know, in a trade, I very well may say, hey, by the way, I'd love to get Lurie Garcia in that deal too, because he's a double A, a shortstop who's already at double A, who really, for a lot of teams, could come in and be their best shortstop prospect.
He's kind of basically like a little bit better offensive version of Freddie Galvis. I mean, he's not quite as elite defensively. I shouldn't say that. He might be more spectacular in some ways than Galvis. He's not as efficient
right.
as Freddie Galvis. But he's in that realm, a defense for a shortstop. He's got speed.
We've seen Galvis or a Jonathan Villar, who was a kind of a, you know, like I think he's better than that. But like when Villar was traded a couple of years ago,
right.
I think there you get that same kind of mindset of where, you know, where he is.
I agree. I mean, I don't know when Lurie Garcia would be ready. He's always had a little swing and miss issues, and he's having them again this year. But he's still hitting close to 700 ops in Double A.
Again, he can defend.
He's Freddie Galvis type. Yeah, you get him as an extra guy. You get him as a third guy.
He's not the cornerstone guy. He's not. But I'll say this: if I was a team and I needed help at shortstop, you know, long term and all, he's the guy. Yeah. If you said he was the third guy in a deal, I'd be very interested in him as a third guy.
I'm not sure who, but I guess to get back to your question, I think I would try to have Andrus and Profar play together. I would try to have them play shortstop and second base, and maybe you move Kinsler. But if that's not doable, I would move one of them to center field.
The point that I came to when we were talking about this just in your office was
I would keep Andrus as long
let's
as
Let's say
I could.
That, okay, you decided, you know what, we want Profar as our shortstop. Even if you started quietly floating out, what could we get for Elvis Andrus? I don't know if you're the Rangers, if there's anything out there good enough to get. Like,
yeah.
I know it sounds crazy, but who is available, potentially, that you'd say, you know what, I'm willing to give up. Let's just say, in a hypothetical for a minute, Jurickson Profar is ready tomorrow to be a solid shortstop. And you said, okay, we're willing to trade Elvis Andrus. I don't think there's anything out there that you can get that would
question.
Be worth trading it. Because Elvis Andrus is one of... We were talking about this when we did it. It's like, okay, so what AL shortstops would you rather have over the next 5 years?
Yeah, it's a very short list of
what shortstops in Major League Baseball would you rather have? Tulo.
Yeah, you'd rather have Tulowitzki. I mean, like, you know, it's hard to know what's going on in Jose Reyes' head.
But maybe you...
Starlin Castro, you know, that's debatable. Starlin Castro's a better hitter by a lot, but I mean...
But
is he going to end up being a shortstop? We don't even know. I mean, he's probably not the best defensive shortstop on his own team. I don't know if Darwin Barney hits enough to be a big league regular on a championship team, but he certainly fields enough. So, and I mean, you see Paul Janish, and being an all-glove, no-hit, what that got him. He got him sent to the minor leagues, and now he'll be a nice stand-in for the Braves. But, I mean, honestly, Andrelton Simmons, based off the one-month look, would be in that discussion, JJ, for me. I mean, I want to see it longer, but, I mean, I wasn't a huge believer in Andrelton Simmons. But then when you lead the Carolina League in batting, I was pretty high on him coming into this year, and he was better than I thought he would be when he got to the big leagues.
He made a significant difference. I was talking to Dave O'Brien, the beat writer for the Braves for the AJC, at the Futures game about Simmons, and he said it was a night and day difference when he showed up, because even if he had not hit at all, what he did defensively made a difference for that team, because they went from Tyler Pastrnicki, who was really shaky defensively, to this guy who was plus defensively. And then you threw in the fact that he was actually one of the better hitters in their lineup too, which was just crazy. But my point being, I don't think all the guys we talked about out there, the only one to me that you would even consider is okay, if you give us Cole Hamels and we got to keep talking because you got to throw some significant other stuff in this deal to make this happen. My point being, this may be almost even like a discussion that's
rhetorical.
It's rhetorical because you don't. He has more value than you can get in a trade.
I would say that if you were to trade Elvis Andrus, if he were the lead guy in a deal with the Diamondbacks, and Justin Upton was what you got back, I know Justin Upton's been bad this year, but in terms of who would I rather have major league-wise, I think I'd still rather have Justin Upton than Elvis Andrus.
I would probably have Andrus, and that maybe I'm overemphasizing shortstop, but you know, but
right. I just think Upton's upside. I know he hasn't had a great year this year, but he hit 31 home runs last year as a 23-year-old.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's hard to find, and right-handed power is hard to find, and he is everything you want in a right fielder. And if you get the right manager who gets through to him and refines him defensively and gets his effort every day, and maybe that's not possible.
I was going to say, at this point,
B.J. Upton and Justin Upton have both been maddeningly inconsistent, and they've both been teases their entire careers.
That's
and
the
it's
thing
frustrating.
I guess that's why I'm
because
saying
they
Andrus
their talent.
I just worry with the thing I just worry about with Upton is that I feel like, are we going to see this where it's like, okay, this year you got an MVP candidate. Next year, we're waiting for the light. You know, we're waiting for it all to come together.
But I don't think that Elvis Andrus is ever going to be a stud. He's a very good player.
Right,
but I don't, and that saying that he's one of the best. I mean, he's in the short list.
It's damning with faint praise.
It really is. It really is, because what is the impact of him offensively? I mean, this might be. I know he's only 23, 24 years old. How old is he? He's 23. And I was talking to a scout about it this week. Physically, he's really filled out, Elvis Andrus. There's no more projection on the body.
He's
filled out.
He's not going to hit for power.
I bet you he hits double digits in home runs 1 year. But what's the maximum there? 12, 15?
Right.
I feel like that's the absolute maximum for Elvis Andrus in a year. What's he hit in his career? 7 in the big league level? 10?
12.
He's hit 12 in his career. I bet
in 2,000 at-bats. No, those were young at-bats.
I bet you in his age, 27, 28 years, he bangs out 10 to 15 home runs. Because, I mean, I do think he's improved as a hitter every year. He hits with a little bit more authority. He's still pretty much a right field, inside-out hitter. There is going to be a time where this guy's going to have enough at-bats, enough strength, and enough confidence to learn to turn on some cripple pitches and hit 10 to 15 home runs a year. That said, I still don't think he'll ever have the offensive impact that Justin Upton can have, and the game is still about scoring runs and offensive impact.
He won't have the offensive impact that Jurickson Profar
will. That's for sure.
The funny thing about it is that Profar's not filled out. Profar, you see Profar in person, and you go, wow, where's this power coming from? Because he's really a pretty, a relatively wiry guy right now.
It's kind
now.
Of an Andrew McCutchen type of power in terms of just bat speed and whip, right?
Right, it is. It is, because you look at it, and this is not him just, raw physical strength powering balls out. Michael, he's powering balls out.
He's virtually roaring as he does it.
Yeah, by the way, that was one of my most enjoyable conversations at the Futures game, was Olt talking about how if the ball was hit to his left, and I mean, he said like a step or two, he knows when he fields it that Jerks and Provar is going to be like, that was my ball. Come on, Mike.
That's funny. That's outstanding.
It's like, and then I said, so I asked Profar about that. He said, we communicate really well. You know, he hears this. And then he pointed out, though, it's like, hey, I got Lurie Garcia over there. And he's like, that was my ball.
That's funny.
We'll meet behind second base.
That's very funny. But that's a luxury that very few teams have. And, I mean, the Reds had – we talked at the beginning of the year, JJ, about how they had Cozart and Yanish for the big league level in AAA, Didi Gregorius, Billy Hamilton, some lower-level guys that they had that I know they like. That's one of the reasons why they would trade a Ronald Torres, who I know hasn't had a good year in the Cubs system. But they felt very good about their up-the-middle depth, especially at shortstop. But it doesn't come close to what the Rangers have. I mean, it just doesn't.
And we haven't even mentioned Odor.
Rougned Odor.
Who's basically having – it's not Jerks and Profar's Valley League season, but it's not a whole lot off as far as offensively. Now, he's, again, second baseman, shortstop, big difference.
Right.
But that being said, having a great season himself and is a very, very solid prospect in his own right.
JJ, I'll wrap up the trade stuff. Just do the Dodgers have any prospects in your mind? I mean, they're clearly going to be buyers. They've already spent a lot of money. They're going to keep on spending money. They want to be a factor. They want to be talked about again. The pressure for that will only increase if Dwight Howard actually gets traded to the Lakers in the NBA. What are the Dodgers?
I don't follow the NBA that closely, but everyone can be linked to Dwight Howard.
Yeah, but no. He wants only a few teams. What do the Dodgers have to deal? Are they anywhere near any of these teams we talked about? Like, are they in between somewhere, the Pirates and the Rangers, or are they even a little bit below the Pirates?
No, they're below
the Pirates.
They're well below the Pirates. Well below, because the Pirates, if the Pirates are willing to trade, Pirates have some massive tradable assets.
We're actually talking about how they have some good tier two, basically, assets.
The Pirates have two legit tier one assets,
right.
And Starling Marte is on
close.
That borderline of being a tier one asset.
And because he's a triple A guy, he's probably a center fielder. Not for them, but for other major league team, he's a center fielder.
This may be something we just need to work on. This is our tier one potential trade. Guys are tier two and our tier threes.
That's not a bad idea.
But no, they have Tyone, Cole are tier ones. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. Marte is on that cusp of being a tier one. Luis Heredia, Alan Hansen, Gregory Polanco are very solid tier twos.
Right.
Like, any of those are guys
who are getting it done at full season ball and have starter, big league
in
regular
Heredia's
tools.
Case, short season, but still, you go, okay, youngest player in the New York Penn League.
I was thinking Hansen and Polanco. Yeah.
And I was going to say, on Heredia, though, with the stuff he has and what he's doing in against much older competition, those are all guys who your scouts are going to come back and say, oh, yeah, we want that guy.
Right. I mean, who are the Dodgers? Have they had a pop-up guy in the Dodgers system this year?
I don't think the Dodgers have a tier one guy. I don't think that they have a guy who you point to. Zach Lee would probably be the closest.
And he's still projection, not really now stuff.
Right. I mean, Ethan Martin's having a bounce-back year, but he's a tier two guy at best.
Ethan Martin's bounce-back year, and that's on the front of BaseballAmerica.com right now. Is that a Jim Schoenert story?
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the bigger developments in the Dodgers organization this year.
If you've got a scout out there if you've got scouts and it's like you're asking your pro scouting department, okay, are we interested in Ethan Martin? Yeah, you're maybe interested, but you've got a lot of hesitations there.
Right.
You know, he was pretty bad for a pretty good while there.
He was.
His control is still not that good. There's kind of still questions about his secondary stuff. There's a lot of things where you go, okay, we wouldn't mind having him, but I'll put it this way. You're not going to build a deal around him.
That's it. He's a complimentary piece. If the Dodgers are making a deal, they would have to include someone like a Nathan Eovaldi, who's a young big leaguer, or – I mean, I don't even know whether young big leaguers they can afford to trade.
Right, they are more likely to make
the
deals
take
for.
We're going
to
take your bad contract like they have in recent
what
years.
What there is that if Alfonso Soriano fit for them, and I don't think he necessarily does, but if he did – that's the kind of guy where you say, you know what, we don't have to give up a whole lot, and we'll take the contract.
That's basically their only real option right now, because the farm system just isn't great.
But the thing about it is that, again, if you look at these trade deals that happen at the trade deadline.
And you've done some study of
this. One of the things that jumps out is that, you know what, a lot of those second-tier deals, you don't end up having to give up a lot of great prospects. So you can get complimentary pieces. If you say, hey, we're going to bulk up our bullpen, you can do that a lot of times for guys you say, okay, that guy could be a reliever long-term for them.
The spare parts.
Right.
And the Dodgers, really, because they couldn't take on any contracts, I think I misspoke before, because they couldn't take on any money in the past, would compensate with better prospects. So one of the best trade chips that was given up in any of these deadline deals that you've in your research was Carlos Santana.
And that was because it's like, oh, well, we don't have any money, so, okay, well, you'll pay for Casey Blake.
I mean, it was kind of unbelievable that the Dodgers.
Yes, we'll pay for Casey Blake.
The Dodgers had to get the Indians to pay. I mean, Los Angeles saying, hey, big money, Cleveland, pay for this contract. That was hard to believe. JJ, we had great questions today from our listeners. At JJCoop36, I'm at John Manuel BA. This is the Baseball America. At John Manuel BA. I said that right. Okay. This is the Baseball America podcast for JJ. I'm John. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.